Tools Day, we've got another show where me and Chris build something with tools that we don't know. This week it's making apps with React Native, so listen up, we've fussed and fussed, now we'll complain about it. Welcome to Tools Day, a podcast about tech tools, tips, and tricks on Tuesdays at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today, we are talking about React Native. Now, if you're new to the show, we have a series called CUBS. It stands for Chris and Yuna Build Stuff, where we try to build something, like a project, using a technology that neither of us are familiar with or really have ever used before. And I think that React Native definitely falls into this category. I certainly haven't used it. Have you used it before, Chris?
I have not used React Native, but I use React every day.
It was definitely interesting for us, and we will get into that on the show. But before we get into it, I do want to give a shout out and thank you to our sponsor. Today's show sponsor is Datadog. Datadog is a software as a service based monitoring platform that provides dev and ops teams with a unified view of all of their systems, applications, and services. You'll be a part of thousands of organizations who already rely on Datadog to collect, visualize, and alert them of abnormalities. There are over 200 turnkey integrations, including AWS, Postgres, Kubernetes, and Slack, all done out of the box with custom metrics to gain full stack observability with a unified view of all of your systems, apps, and services. They have a great log management service that integrates with the logging systems that you already use, so make sure to check that out. Other key features include real-time visibility for customizable dashboards, algorithmic alerts like anomaly detection, outlier detection, forecasting alerts, end-to-end request tracing to visualize application performance, and real-time collaboration. Datadog is offering listeners a free trial, and as an added bonus for signing up and creating a dashboard, they'll send you a free t-shirt. And their logo is a dog, of course, so who wouldn't want a dog t-shirt? Like, I love dogs, man. Another dog t-shirt. Heck yeah, sign me up. So if you want to sign up, you can build your free dashboard and start your free trial at datadog.com/toolsday. That's datadog.com/toolsday. Sign up there at that link, datadog.com/toolsday, for your free trial and free t-shirt. Thank you, Datadog.
All right.
Yeah. I don't even know where to start with React Native. I feel like it's actually so much different from web development than I expected it to be.
Okay.
But let's first talk about the apps that we made and the technologies that we used.
Yeah, sure. I was just doing a quick getting started. I wanted to fetch some data and display it. It was basically a to-do. There were a couple of things that I used in addition to just React Native. I did the create React Native route. So I used the start CLI there. I went ahead and used Glamorous Native for styling, which was kind of fun to mess around with. And the other kind of thing is that I use React Navigation for creating, you know, pages. So that was kind of my fairly straightforward stack there. But that was me.
Yeah, I have so much that I want to just talk about in those few sentences alone. Like, building, routing, styling, like, it's all so different. For my application, I started doing keto this week. So I built a net carb calculator. Ooh. Just super basic. Basically, net carbs are your carbohydrates minus the fiber inside of them, and then minus any sugar alcohols. So that's how you get, like, your net carbs. I'm not a biologist. Don't, like, get mad if I said something wrong here. I don't care. Anyway, net carbs.
You're doing the math just, like, wrong. Oh, God, this is terrible.
Essentially, carbs minus fiber. Yeah. Some people also subject sugar alcohols, and I did in my calculator, but basically just a React app that had state that pushed to a Firebase database that stored your information for, like, every day when you count your net carbs, and you could just add up, tally up, or count down your carbs minus fiber.
I also used Firebase.
Nice. Firebase is just, like, the easy to use database that you don't have to think about.
It's like, I don't.
Your girl doesn't want to set up a database.
Exactly. Like, if you don't want to do the thinking around, what do I use? Postgres? Does everyone hate Mongo still? Just use Firebase.
You know, since Firebase came out, I don't even have to worry about those anymore.
I know.
It's like, Yeah. Such a clear mind.
I feel really lazy. There's also something really cool, super new, called AWS AppSync. It sets up a GraphQL thing with DynamoDB. Anyways, not related to this, but very cool if you want to check it out later.
Maybe we should dive into it in another show.
Yes.
I'm curious if it's like a better experience than Firebase, but just knowing AWS products.
It, probably not.
They have thousands of options. They have thousands of products. And they're all just trying to vie to take over like a little other area of market share. And I just don't trust their UI right now. I feel like the other products are probably
That's very
better.
Fair. Very fair. But, all right. So how was your getting started experience?
Okay, so I actually got started a few times.
Okay.
We had this idea a while ago, and we were going to record this show last time we recorded just 2 weeks ago because we have our podcast every other week, and my phone got stolen, so I was in the process of building an app, and then I had no phone to test on for a week, and then we ended up doing a different show, which actually turned out to be one of my favorite shows. Like, this is an aside, but the last show we did was awesome. I loved it. It was about ideation and process, so check out that show if you haven't. Anyway, the first time I started, I used React Native CLI. And so I was going through the React Native CLI documentation.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that comes with Expo, which I learned about. And so I installed that on my iOS client. Then I learned that you have to be like on the same Wi-Fi network. Anyway, like use it as your barcode. It's really easy to use. Instead of having an emulator on your computer, it's an emulator on your phone. That's a tool that I've seen throughout a few different like getting started tutorials. So like definitely Expo is a popular tool. That's the first thing that I tried to do. And then I tried to emulate it on my laptop after my phone got stolen, and I started installing Xcode, and that took 2 hours to download. Like, fun fact.
Yeah, so downloading anything from the Apple App Store is a mess. If you go the Expo route, so Expo is this nice kind of abstraction layer that's not quite React Native. It's like some in-between state.
It's for iOS specifically. We're not talking about Android.
It's for both.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Never mind, I'm wrong.
You can ship to both. but it gives you a bunch of nice functionality. Like if you actually publish your application to the App Store, you can do over-the-air updates. However, if you use Expo and the create React Native route, you cannot use any native iOS or Android APIs or modules. So
you can't use camera or anything like that?
You have access to most of the APIs, but you can't use like native code. So if you wanted to hook into the Objective-C library that iOS has, you can't do that. I'm not a native developer, but
great. That sounds good to me. I don't need to.
There was like a good chunk of things that when I was reading is that if you're intending to go create React Native app is create React Native app, yes, is great for kickstarting your application, getting hitting the ground running. But if you're intending to go deep, a ton of libraries oftentimes will use, they'll have some of the native code inside of it. And if you use the Expo route, you can't use those libraries. And so, just keep that in mind, I guess, if you're deciding which route to take.
That's good to know. Definitely not something that I ran into in my very, very basic application. But that was sort of like the first approach I took. And then I started to try to find a development environment that I felt comfortable in, which I found to be a challenge because, like I said earlier, React Native is a lot different from Web React than I expected.
Really? So for me, it was not as different. I thought it'd be more different than it actually was. So where did you find the big differences were?
I think that I'm coming from a styling perspective,
okay.
Whereas yeah. I found the functionality similar.
Yeah.
It's React in like the sense that you have scope and props and like everything passes through and like everything works in components. Awesome, great. But I found that the actual components that you were offered were very limited because you're building with a sort of mobile technology. So you have to include libraries, like React Native has components, but also I ended up using a different library because the second attempt that I started was using a starter kit that I'll talk about. And we'll link to all the stuff in the show notes, link to Expo, et cetera. It was a very limited set of components. Like I wanted access to everything in a form, and I didn't have access to that. Like I wanted access to just like a number type input, and I had to like figure, okay, so I have to just, like, send props, but then I have to read all the documentation of how to write it in this specific way to be understood by this framework that I'm now using. It wasn't just like writing code for the web that I'm using React to hook into. You didn't have those native web components. And then, like, styling was annoying because I personally like CSS modules, which don't work well with React Native. I found one link that had an example of that, and I didn't really love how it was set up. I'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. Glamorous, I could see that is great to use. Like, yeah. I kind of had to use it in this case because that was, like, the second best option for me.
Yeah, so there's a specific, like, it's not Glamorous proper. It's Glamorous proper is actually deprecated now. But there is Glamorous Native, which is the Glamorous ideas in a native package for React Native.
Styled components. The idea of styled components. That's what it is.
Right.
Using it in that way.
Right. Well, so there was the original package of Glamorous, which is a wrapper on Glamour. And then the Glamorous Native. And it has the same API structure, or same like API structure you'd have on normal Glamorous. And so you say, you know, glamorous.text if you want to use one of the native text component, or glamorous.text input, I think, for the text input component. So very similar that way. And it makes styling really familiar. So I've been using a bunch of CSS and JS recently. And so using Glamorous Native was real nice. Like, oh, this is pretty much the same thing.
It's not my preferred style of CSS and JS, but it is what you have to use when you're doing React Native. Like I said, there's one example with CSS modules. Not ideal, because you still have to write your CSS differently.
Yeah.
You don't have access to all of the CSS properties that you do on the web.
Yeah.
And that's something, like, this is kind of why I think we had different perspectives going in, where I thought it'd be more similar to, like, oh, I'm building a website that just exists on my phone.
Right, right.
And you, like, I guess, realized that before you went into it.
I feel like I've been, like, really meshed into, like, building apps and, like, app components. So, you know, for the last, like, week, I've been grappling with this really, like, difficult virtualization problem. So virtualizing is saying I only want to render what's on my screen as opposed to a gigantic list. So I have, like, a million items in this list. I want to show 20 at a time, make sure the scroll stays at 60 frames per second. This is a huge challenge on the web because the DOM is super slow. In React Native, it's really, really, really easy. You just use the component called FlatList, and it does it all for you. It's, like, no work whatsoever. And it made me a little bit grumpy because I was like, oh, I've just been, like, doing all this hard work because the DOM kind of sucks sometimes. And here we are in React Native where this component is just drop and go. You get the same 60 FPS for a gigantic list for no work whatsoever. So
I think that's what I didn't like about it. Okay. It was a lot of drop and go. Like, you're provided these components and they're very basic and you can rearrange them on your page. But then when you want to, like, make them unique at all, it's kind of like jumping through hoops. I'm just going to give a very basic example.
Yeah.
There's no background property in React Native. There's only background color that I've been able to find.
Okay.
And so that means that doing, like, a linear gradient is a whole thing. You have to have, like, a separate package. And it's just, like, you have to have packages for things that I expect to be basic styling for applications.
See, this is...
And it made me really respect web apps. It's just, like, the power I have in control with, like, at least my knowledge of the web.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I didn't even think of using a linear gradient. I was like, oh, background? I can slap on my solid block of color. Perfect. We're good to go.
Right. So what was your experience? Like, what did you like about it? What did you not like about it?
Yeah, so...
React Native specifically.
Yeah, so React Native, I did actually like the... So I use Create React Native App. It was actually really straightforward to use. If you boot it up, it kicks you to the Expo thing, and it provides you, like, a QR code you can scan with your phone, or you can use iOS or ADB emulators on your computer. So developing on it was just super seamless. It took me, like, no time whatsoever to get started. There are a couple hiccups you have to do. So if you run it on a Mac OS, you'll run into this thing. Hey, you know, your kernel size is too small, or you might need the Xcode developer tools for the iOS simulator,
which,
you know, as you kind of found out, Xcode takes 10 billion years to install.
Just be prepared. 2 hours. Also, that's 10 billion years.
Yeah. But the development experience was at least for me, was super sleek until I ran into that issue where I was trying to install a random package and I couldn't do it because I was in Expo, not in React Native CLI. So that is...
I agree with you. I actually completely agree with what you just said. Like, the startup experience is very smooth. It does have a CLI tool. I also use Create React app for my first take. At the second take, I used just like a starter environment. So both of those times, they came prepackaged with Apollo, with Expo client, and with the ability to like run it through Xcode and emulate on Android as well. That whole experience, just the startup, was really nice. But I think that more and more technologies are having better and better startup experiences too. Like React itself on the web has a great startup experience. Yeah. Vue does. I'm happy to see that.
Yeah, I think that the developer experience, the DX, is suddenly now a big priority, as we suddenly have this huge wave of developers hitting the web now. And it's like, oh yeah, wait, we should probably make this stuff easy to use, that people use it.
But I think there's a big difference between startup experience and actual usage.
Okay, fair enough.
And I mean, startup is essentially like you run three commands and you have an app running. Great. But everyone can do that. Not everyone can figure out how to really make a unique application and make what they want to happen. It's like art, you know? Like, you can have a vision. You could get like a canvas and have it like painted a block of blue, but then it's what happens after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say that beyond just startup things, there are a lot of niceties that I liked in React Native. Like, fetch is already there. So I was kind of worried at first. I was like, I don't know how, you know, native applications actually do, you know, calls out to a database. It's like, oh no, you just do a fetch call, everything's fine. Everything's done in Flexbox, right? Which is both a plus and a pro and a con. I've been really into CSS Grid recently. So I was like, is there a grid here? And it's like, no, there's no grid. There's just Flexbox. But it's still, you know, Flexbox, which is pretty good. So
I didn't find that. Well, I guess like that happens in the styling, but the starter environment that I used, which is called React Native Starter Kit by McNamee, McNamee. I'll link to that. But essentially in this, you had components that were spacers that would create like padding between your elements.
Okay.
Maybe that's not normal. Maybe that's just like what I experienced, but I thought that was uncomfortable for me in terms of my developer experience.
Yeah, I didn't actually use really many custom components per se, more than just installing them and see what they did. For most of my basic blocks, I was just using the built-in components. And so if you go into the React Native API documentation, eventually if you scroll down far enough, you'll find this gigantic list of components. And you know, in React Native, everything's kind of wrapped in a view. A view is basically the div of native applications. And if you're just kind of tossing views everywhere, I thought it was pretty like, okay, I use Flex 1 for growing. I can restrict things by height. It took me a couple of seconds to like wrap my mind around the unit list thing. So in React Native, there are no, or in mobile in general, there's no units per se. It's like a density type thing. But I like the layout. I thought it'd be more difficult than it ended up being.
Yeah. In my case, the spacer was a part of the React starter kit environment. It was another component that you used just for like default uniform spacing. But it also came with Native Base. And Native Base was the UI component library that this starter kit used. So I ended up using the Native Base components.
Got it. I did find this site called, and it's the React Native documentation site. If you get all the way through, at the end they have a bunch of links which are great. One of them is js.coach, and it's a ton of React Native components. It's like, it's just kind of the same thing as npm, but specifically for React Native components. And so if you can go through there, there's like some nifty ones that you might want to look by. I was kind of messing around with the maps just because I've been like, I have this grand vision in my head that one day I will build a better Google Places app for your phone.
What is Google Places?
So if you've used Google Places, it's like a subset of Google Maps where you can go and create lists and like drop like pins on the map. Say, oh, this is a restaurant I want to go to. So if you're building like a vacation planner, you can mark all these icons and say, this is a restaurant, this is a tourist spot, this is blah blah blah, and create a really nice map for you that you can share and reuse.
Oh, right. On Android, I guess you don't have Apple Maps, which gives you the ability to tag places.
Yes. So Google Places works really well on desktop, but both on iOS and Android, it's complete garbage. I don't know why. So I'm like, oh, maybe I'll build a better one. But
I find that Google Maps is fine, though, because inside of Google Maps itself, you can do tagging.
So you can do that on desktop, and you can do it a very slimmed down version on mobile. But if you go to the desktop separate application, which is kind of part of the main Maps application, it's so much bigger and so much deeper and does so many more things. I just don't know why it's not on the web, the mobile as well. But
well, maybe you can build it.
Yes, that's the
that's the idea.
What about you? Any what are some of the big hiccups you ran into?
I don't think there were any big hiccups. I feel like my conclusion to this is I like that React Native exists because it gives JavaScript developers the ability to build native apps. Like, that is a big deal in itself. I think that sort of setup and environment was nice. I think the community is really big, and you can definitely get a lot of help and tutorials online. There's conferences around this. One thing that I feel about this experience is that I just need more time to learn the mobile syntax because it is just so different. Like, the limitations of the properties that I can use to style,
right,
the limitations of the components that I have access to, what comes from a UI library, that's really common when you're building with React Native. And then, like, I like to be really custom. Like, I'm a DIY developer. I like to really figure things out. So just, like, figuring out where I can break those. Like, I don't want to use a package to make a gradient, you know?
Yeah, that's
fair. But it could just be that I come from the web world, and that's a completely different mindset that a mobile developer would have.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Like, the coolest part is that, you know, you can, when I plugged in my phone and it popped up on my phone as an application, I go, this is super cool, right? It's kind of the first feeling when I first built my first web app, and I was like, this is, you know, I'm a wizard now.
That was actually very cool.
Yeah.
I was hanging out with, like, my boyfriend, and I showed him on my phone just, like, a hello world.
Yeah.
He was like, whoa! It's like mind blown.
I'm the best. Yeah. And so I love that this just gives me that feeling so easily, but I agree with you. Like, I think to go really deep into mobile development, you start to learn a bunch of mobile syntaxy things, and I realized how little I know about the mobile world. I guess it's like, I don't know any of these terms.
Right now, if I was to recreate the app that I built for this Cubs episode, I'd probably just build a progressive web app, save it to my home screen, and it would work just as fine.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm coming from a very, very biased position of saying I kind of like progressive web apps more now because it made me realize just how much more powerful, at least for me, because of my experience, web applications are.
Yeah, I kind of had a mixture. I was like, you know, for me, I was just blown away by how performant you can make apps so easily on native. I was looking at that example.
That's very true.
A Flatless. Like, it's like easy to hit 60 frames per second as long as you don't do something incredibly stupid. Whereas on the web, like, you have to do, you know, some work to hit that marker. So that was impressive to me. But I think for me, if I was going to do it again, I think for now I'll stay with my progressive web apps as well. But definitely something I'll keep looking into in the future.
I totally agree with you, though. You can't really beat the performance aspect of building something natively versus using a browser on a website. Like, that's already a level of abstraction.
Yeah.
Sorry, a browser on a mobile device.
Yeah.
So I completely agree with you, especially if you needed something that was, like, real time. I think that React Native is a much better solution. Well, I guess you have WebRTC now, but it's just, like, the performance aspect of, I don't know. I'm torn about this. I'm just talking out loud.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's, there's this thing called Proton Native I've been looking at recently for a bit. And it's...
Hasn't that been around for a long time?
No, like 6 months, maybe.
Proton. Right. You just told me about
that. Yeah. So there's Electron, which is using Node.js for desktop applications. And then somebody recently made Proton, which is using React Native-like things for desktop applications. So you write JavaScript, but it compiles down into a native application. So you don't have the big Node overhead that you would on an Electron app. So hypothetically, you can build these hyper-performant, really great applications in JavaScript for your desktop. So... that, I think, is super cool.
We'll definitely do a Cubs on that. Yeah. We did one on Electron, and I thought Electron was actually a lot of fun to figure out and use.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. I think what I was thinking of was PhoneGap. Remember PhoneGap and Meteor?
Yeah, there's PhoneGap, Cordova. There were a bunch of things that said, hey, you build this once and it'll deploy everywhere, right? And so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's like also a benefit of React Native, right? Is that you build it once and you have your code base, and then you can just export that to both Android and iOS.
Yeah.
So lots of pros. I just think coming from a web developer background, it was difficult for me to wrap my head around mobile while learning. I guess it was just that, really. Like, the syntax is really different.
Yeah.
And the entire environment and like community and the frameworks that you have here, those are all different.
Yeah.
It's just like a completely different world. I think if I had more time to focus on it, I would learn a lot and be way more successful. But I don't think it's like a dive in with 1 week of time and you're like, you'll know how to use React Native.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have any like final comments or advice for people who want to start building native apps using React Native?
Yeah. I highly recommend use the Create React Native CLI versus the React Native CLI just for getting started.
Or a starter kit. I used that and I used starter kit and they were both great.
Yeah. Also recommend Glamorous Native. If you're already used to styling with JavaScript on the web, Glamorous Native makes it super easy. And like, oh, this is super comfortable. But that's it for me.
I went through the rabbit hole of figuring out how to use CSS modules with React Native. I did the work for you. It's not worth it. Just like use CSS and JS in other ways. That's all we have for today's show. We hope that you liked it. If you liked these types of shows, we definitely want to do more Cubs shows in the future. Let us know. Just tweet at us what you liked about it, what you want to see us try out. We'd love to hear from you. You can also chat us up on the Spectrum Network chat, which is spectrum.chat. Again, want to thank our sponsor, Datadog. If you want to start a free trial of your platform monitoring dashboard, you can get a free dashboard as well as a free t-shirt with a dog on it at datadog.com/toolsday. Chris knows how much I love dogs. datadog.com/toolsday. And Toolsday is also where you will tweet us at, TOOLSDAY. Please give this podcast a like, a star, a thumbs up wherever you're listening to it. The way that other people hear about it is when you show us love. So if you like this show, just show us some love. I also want to give a shout out to one of the sponsors that has been showing us love for a long time, and that is Webflow. They've been supporting us on Patreon for a couple months, and they ask us not to read an ad out. So thank you, Webflow. Check them out, too, if you have a chance. That's all we have today, and we will see you next time.